Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey, Mike, pop quiz. What is the standard go-to method for emergency decon?
That's pretty easy. Wet decon, right?
Well, you know, you're not the only one that may be thinking that, but it's actually dry decon.
No. How many times have I heard dilution is the solution to pollution?
Actually, too many. And that's the issue. Makes sense if you think about it. Without the use of water, we don't need to spend extra time setting up traditional showers or pools, and there's no wastewater afterwards. And you're not going to freeze anybody to death if it's below 60 degrees.
Check out firstlinetech.com/drydecon. Firstline Technology has a whole webpage dedicated to the methodology and links to plenty of dry decon resources. See for yourself why dry decon with FiberTech should be your go-to immediate decon solution.
With many major cities having nearby waterways, subways, and sewers, first responders sometimes face rescue situations where they must wade into stagnant water. Turnout and traditional rescue gear is not designed to provide protection from hazards and chemicals while submerged in stagnant water. Lion prides itself on making garments to keep first responders safe and is now offering a protection solution for these stagnant water situations. The lightweight one-piece FRS, which is flood response suit, protects against lower levels of liquid concentrations that may be encountered in flood zones or stagnant water where wading is required. The FRS is a non-certified hoodless garment with a special AquaSeal zipper, butyl wrist gloves, and neoprene collar to keep the hazards out. The FRS is made from Kempak, selectively permeable fabric by Gore-Tex Labs, which provides protection from toxic industrial chemicals and blood-borne pathogens while managing heat and body stress for longer mission times. When it comes to ChemBio solutions, Lion has your back. Let's get to the show.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another killer episode of the Hazmat Guys. I'm Michael Monaco.
That was bad. Oh, I'm Bobby Salveson, and it is episode
283. We're in the 300s there, buddy.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Yeah, we're gonna be shuffling, just so you know. I know we say this, and at 400, we officially, pass the scepter of who intros. Nobody cares, to be honest with you. In fact, 50, that's almost 2 years ago.
That what?
It's like 50 episodes a year. It's 52 episodes a year we do. So basically every 2 years we
every
pass
the 2 years.
That is a stupid thing. We should do it every 50. But anyway.
But if you think about it, right? So every 2 years we're at 400 episodes. We've been doing this for almost 8 years now.
Almost eight years.
Oh my God, we've been doing this for almost 8 years.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're going to get like 20 episodes out of this and not have anything to talk about. And you're like, I think we will. All right.
Yeah. We picked a wide topic, so it just keeps going. So
it really does.
No, but like we're going to, I've been, it's been little needles, but we're reinventing the whole video interface and how it looks. We have like a whole plan. I'm not going to move it so you can't read it. But
somebody's
we have
gonna
a whole
pause.
Yeah, somebody's going to pause and be able to read what the hell I'm writing. But like we're going to be rolling out a pretty much, I'm not going to say we're reinventing the wheel, but we are definitely putting a paint job on this house.
Yeah.
So it's about
putting
time.
A few baseball cards in the spokes.
Yes. So with that being said, specialist happy hour, fourth Thursday of every month, 1900 hours Eastern Standard Time. And it's going to be at thehazmatguys.com/happy. And the fourth, we are recording on the 10th for the 17th, but that's going to be the 23rd, March 23rd. Fantastic day is the next happy hour. I hope to see you guys there. Yep.
The round table was pretty good this week.
Glenn Rudner, we had from CN, the trains, the rail cars. So
Because that's been in the news a little bit. It's been here and there.
You know, luckily, that I can't believe how amazingly topical that randomizer of chemicals was for that
AI,
last episode
man.
We did.
AI is just going to take over the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Chat. I don't know how they do it, but.
Chatty chat.
Next conference is Oklahoma. Nope. Sorry. South Carolina. South Carolina going there on Patty's Day. And then Oklahoma, then New York State, then Midwest, and then Cold Zone, and then Baltimore, and then Massachusetts. Only because I don't know if there's any other things in the middle.
Yeah, I don't think there's much over the summertime.
So, anyhow, your opening segue kind of alluded to tonight's episode.
It did. We have a rundown of a chemical suicide event that happened in some random city. Again, we have interviewed the people that were on scene. We had some dinner with them the other night. Me and Bob, we flew out there, talked with them, got a really good rundown, and we feel like we can narrate this run as if we were there.
Yeah. It's it should be pretty good. And now that you're saying this, I have to go, and while we're doing this live, I'm modifying the picture because I just thought of something.
Well, figure that. You should see you know what? I will show really quick because probably the best joking around with the picture, which has nothing to do with our run that we're going to talk about.
There we go. I'm fixed.
Because there's almost no connection. But we in New York City, there was a guy running around who was robbing and killing people in a hazmat suit.
Oh,
he was. Yes, he was the hazmat killer. Oh, God damn it. Why didn't I think of this sooner?
Should I pause it?
No, don't pause it. It's right, it will be right at my fingertips, I promise. No, okay. It won't. Okay, I'll bring it up next time. Watch next time. It's probably one of my favorite Photoshop things. Anyway, so there was this there was a run. It was a chemical suicide. It was on the streets of a city. Mm-hmm. And we're going to kind of chat about it a little bit because it was a really good interagency operation. Now, this city has not been known for the ability for different agencies to work well together over the past 20 or so years. And things are changing.
About Washington, D.C.
Yes. Yeah, totally. Totally. 100% Washington, D.C. Nobody works together there. But this things are changing. The environment is changing. The world is changing. People are changing. And it's interesting to see how the boots on the ground can work together. So on top of it being a very good interagency run, it was also a pretty straightforward chemical suicide. And what they had was they pulled up and there was a car on the back of a dead end street. Dead end was maybe 100 yards long. So the car was in the back. EMS had already been there. They opened up the car. They got a whiff of rotten egg smell that almost overcame the technician, the emergency medical technician. They closed the door. They said they didn't even try to pull her out because there was suspended lividity. So obvious signs of death. Okay, no problem. So we arrive on scene. And I feel like I've been briefed enough on this to be able to take the first person.
Okay.
So we arrive on scene and, you know, sure enough, you could definitely smell some of the rotten egg smell. And so we start to kind of formulate a game plan. But in order to formulate a game plan, we have to be able to communicate with the other agencies on scene. There was the Office of Emergency Management, there was the Medical Examiner's Office, and there was the Police Department detectives. Three key components of this. Now, there was actively releasing hydrogen cyanide. If you got close enough to the car, there
cyanide
was...
Cyanide is sulfide.
Sulfide. You're right. Okay. Actively releasing hydrogen sulfide. There was no, you know, usually they put up the little note. There was no note.
Really? How inconsiderate.
Nope. I know, very inconsiderate. But the other things that she did were very considerate. Like she put herself in the back of the car and made the reaction go off in the front of the car.
Oh.
So she didn't get contaminated. Yeah, you don't want to get it. It's messes everything up. And so we had active hydrogen sulfide being released, and the recon team, as they would get to the car to kind of do a quick look, they were getting active readings from the car. So the chemistry was still taking place. Whatever the chemistry was taking place. Now they found a few different items. They saw when they went in, they saw two buckets. One bucket was on the ground and was filled with product, and the other bucket just had a little bit of residual left over. They could also see the Works, which is a toilet bowl cleaner.
Hydrochloric acid, I believe that is.
Hydrochloric acid, yep. And then they saw a lime sulfate solution.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, or a lye sulfate solution, lime sulfate solution. So, and that kind of put a little bit of a twist into the process, because they didn't look to see what the product. I mean, they knew it was a sulfur product, right? They didn't realize that the product itself was a base. And this kind of comes into play a little bit during the actual, the dealing with the product itself. Anyway, they come back. We've got the pictures. They do the look, blah, blah, blah. So we go, okay, well, there's a few different things that we can do. However, we don't belong here.
Hmm.
Like, straightforward. We just don't belong here. There's no hazard. I mean, there is a hazard, but there's no life risk because the person's dead. And this is totally 100% a PD issue. And if we do anything, we are going to destroy a crime scene. So with that process very much in mind, there was a small little interagency IAP, incident action plan meeting, and we discussed with PD and the medical examiner and made it very clear. We were like, listen, we don't really have a role here unless you want us to have a role here. If you want us to have a role here, these are the things that we can do. Please let us know what your goals are, what you would like to see. We will let you know what our actions are and how they might interfere with your goals or how they might benefit your goals.
Hmm.
The example I give for that is they're like, well, we need to make sure that there's no more hydrogen sulfide. Okay, great. We can do that. However, in that process, we are destroying all of your evidence. There's nothing really left over. So there's two choices. Either you could not care about that or we could sample. They at this moment, they were like, we don't really care about it. And we were like, really? You don't care at all? And they're like, no, we have video of her doing it. There's no homicide here. So we don't care what happens to the chemicals. We know what happened. We have video proof from multiple angles of her doing this to herself. We were like, all right, cool. So that gave us the green light to neutralize the product. Now, based upon anything I've said, do you find there to be a concern about neutralizing the product?
Yes.
What?
Because it's an acid plus a product. And so therefore, when you change the pH again, you're going to reactivate it, I would believe. Hey, listeners. The Hazmat Guys have some great news for you and your organization. We are really stepping up our brand of in-person training in addition to the great content you get on demand. Now, we know what you're thinking, but this is already incredibly great stuff, and how could it possibly get better? All I can say is, wait until we're in front of you. When we gather the best of the best from across this planet and even beyond, and assemble an instructional cadre that is seriously second to none. And now we have a ton of ways to help you, your team, or your organization get to a level that makes everybody proud. From subscriptions, on-demand, hybrid methods to full in-person goodness. You can contact me, Bob, at thehazmatguys.com to schedule a call and find a solution that works for you. And every participant of an in-person class gets a free one-year premium subscription, which sounds pretty good. So contact me at bob@thehazmatguys.com and get some more information.
Totally reactivated all over again. So this 100%. So the solution, it was a little bit of acid got poured into this like 5-gallon jug of lye sulfur. So the it's not like other sulfur products, right? Like you could take Head and Shoulders as a thing, and that's, I mean, it's a base, but it's not really like a base base, and you don't really have to worry about it. But this was both a, we were dealing with both a caustic and an acid, and the base was the sulfur containing compound. So when we go to neutralize it, we're going to off gas a ton of hydrogen sulfide, which changed up our zone. Not that it changed up our zonings a little, but it added another complexity to the metering operation, where not only did we have to do an acid and base titration or neutralization, but we now had to have another team with monitors surrounding the area, because it's a densely populated area, to make sure that we weren't generating more hydrogen sulfide than the atmosphere could disperse.
I do have a trick, and I'm going to write that down. That might be a premium thing. I have a trick for that, and I'm not taking credit for it, and I'll discuss that in premium. But I also have a website that might have been helpful that was passed on to me that I'll throw out in premium as well. So all you specialists and technicians, go to the video and listen to what we're going to say, because I have a couple of things to bring up on that one.
Yeah. So
sorry.
It's okay. They did the neutralization. Everything went really smooth. We got tons of hydrogen sulfide go off. I mean, every time they neutralized, the meters would be going off about 10 feet around the neutralization point. Once we kind of got beyond like 12-15 feet, everything dissipated. We were metering the windows, we were metering entryways of other buildings, just to be on the safe side. And then we got everything neutralized, opened up the car, ventilated. And then once we were no longer getting meter readings, the situation, the hazard was pretty much over. We assisted the medical examiner in coming in, continuing to monitor and meter for them for hydrogen sulfide while they took pictures, while they examined the body. Me and the other guy, the other backup member, helped him pull the body out, get it into the body bag. We metered the body bag. Like, it was just a really good interagency operation. We helped them. They were very appreciative of the help, very appreciative of the information. They were very happy that it was on our end, just like a very straightforward, like a no-nonsense type of operation. Everything got done as quickly and as good as possible. And in the process of doing decon, a picture of me was taken. And do you have that picture? Because I need to defend myself.
Let's see. Let me fix this. Hold on a second, you guys.
We're going on into infinity and beyond.
I had this set up, but it didn't work out so good. All right, keep going. Okay. I'll fix this.
So I, of course, because this made the news media, was inundated with this picture and people being like, what are you doing? You're taking off your mask. You look like you're covered in product, so on and so forth. All right. So I just want to let everybody know who's going to see this and write. I was not the entry team on this one. I was part of the backup team. As a result, I never was in contact with any product. There was nothing for me to be decontaminated with before I took my mask off. Right? If it were a normal condition, I would have removed all that garment before taking the mask off. Right? My air would have been the last thing to come off. But since I was the backup team and I was standing by, as per our new NFPA 470 regulations, I was backup. I was just on air making sure that the guys were safe. And then I helped out a little bit with air monitoring through the process. But
you
I
mean
never
your twin brother, not you. I mean, because...
Yes. Yeah. Obviously. Like, because obviously. It's a different, totally different.
He works
city.
For another department. Got yes. Those guys.
Yeah. I mean, he's got hair. I'm bald.
Right.
Yes. So just to clarify, I wasn't improperly deconning myself or improperly dolphing. I actually had no contamination. So if I'm not coming in contact, if you're not coming in contact with any product and you're not contaminated, there's no reason for you to go through the decontamination process. Right.
They don't call it. They don't call it decontamination. Exposuration. Maybe. Or yes. Something like that.
De-exposuration.
De-exposure. That's called a psychologist.
So I've been inundated with people being like, you know, how could you do it wrong? Like, don't you know the last thing you're supposed to take off is your mask? And I'm like, whoa, wait a second. Listen, I'm all about like calling people out and being like, what's going on? But at least ask what's going on first. I was not contaminated when I took this mask off. And no, I did not clean up the product with my face, which was a question that was asked. and no, I am not trying to go for the role of Doc Brown in the next Back to the Future.
That's
so these are all questions that were asked. But yeah, this is kind of a not an important thing, but you know, we do things and sometimes we don't realize why we do them. Why go through the process of decontaminating when you're not contaminated? I didn't hold anything. I didn't touch anything. We pulled the dead body out of the back of the car, but the reaction took place in the front seat. So without
even like the whole thing of like, and again, you know, when you see these pictures and we teach it in class, you always see the entry team come out and they both go through that car wash or whatever the hell it is. And I'm like, you know, okay, for the opener, for the new guy, it makes sense. They see the whole thing and then you go, is that really how you're going to do it? And the answer is no, because they should have been doing clean guy, dirty guy.
Right.
Right. So right away, if you do clean guy, dirty guy, you should be roughly 50% less decon needed. And I'm a big fan of being a little less, I say it in class as a joke, but why stand when you can sit? Why sit when you can lay down? Why lay down when you can just take a nap, right? Like, I'm trying to get my innermost orbital, my S orbital, and relax as much as possible. And so if I'm able to drop a good portion of my decontamination off because I never touched anything. Now, again, you have to put it in perspective. If I'm in an area or it's in vapor form or gaseous form, I might have to do some decon, but it's not going to be nearly as much as the guy that got dirty.
Right. Or was doing the neutralization, or was standing there and may have been splashed during the neutralization process, or pulled the chemicals out of the vehicle and now it's on his hands. And naturally, when something's on our hands, we touch our body. Like, I get all of that, but you just have to trust me that I didn't play with anything except a meter that day.
Right. So I think this is good. Like, it shows a couple of things. And did you guys do any ventilation profiles or anything on ERDSS or anything?
No, we didn't do the ventilation on the profile on ERDSS for two reasons. One, it was outdoors, so there was very little to ventilate with the exception of the car. The second was it was a car. So, you know, to what we ended up doing was, instead of trying to calculate how long things would take, we just went right to the real world, right? Because we always say our research is theoretical, and then we see what our meters tell us the real world is saying. So we opened up all the car doors, turned on the fan, allowed it to blow while we were doing the neutralization. When the neutralization was done and we weren't getting any more hydrogen sulfide out of the neutralization, we then turned off the fan and monitored the car. So despite, even if the calculations like on ERDSS would be like ventilate for 5 hours, if you go in with a meter and you're not getting any readings, then your ventilation mission is accomplished.
Mm.
So that's kind of the route that we took. Like, instead of sitting doing all the calculations, we were like, well, it's an open car. There's a massive amount of fresh air being blown in. Let's just do that while we were neutralizing. We'll turn off the fan and see where we're going from there. Had we still, for some reason, gotten readings in the car, or if this were like an indoor space, then we probably would have gone and done some ERDSS calculations and figured out what was needed.
I like it. I like it. You want to flip over to a premium?
Yeah, because I want to hear about the site that you've got.
Oh, my word. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you on the premium side, if you're so bold.
Well, that wraps up another episode of The Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.